So last time I spoke, there were a couple of questions raised at the end of the class. Some of you were here. One of them was about the Yuga avatars in Satya Yuga and Treta Yuga. So I wrote to Sridhananda Maharaj because I figured he might, know. And he said, check the Veda base, which of course I guess I should have done in the first place. Anyway, I found these verses. These are from the 11th canto, 5th chapter, about the Yuga avatars and Satya Yuga and Treta Yuga, also Dwapara Yuga, Kali Yuga. And Satya Yuga, it says, the Lord is white and four-armed, has matted locks, and wears a garment of tree bark. He carries a black deer skin, a sacred thread, prayer beads, and the rod and water pot of a brahmachari. In Satya Yuga, the Supreme Lord incarnates as a form brahmachari described in the previous verse and personally introduces the process of meditation. And he's glorious. It says, in Satya Yuga, the Lord is glorified by the names Hansa, Suparna, Vaikuntha, Dharma, Yogeshwara, Amala, Ishwara, Purusha, Abhyakta, and Paramatma. So just as Krishna has, well, according to Lord Chaitanya, I think he said millions of names. But anyway, these are some of the names that the Lord is known by in the Satya Yuga. He comes in a four-armed form, whitish in color and complexion, and teaches the process of self-realization for that age, which is meditation. Then it goes on to the next age. In Treta Yuga, the Lord appears with a red complexion. He has four arms, golden hair. Now, this is quite an extraordinary-looking personality, I would think. But, I mean, golden hair and a red complexion. That's pretty unusual. You don't find that too often in human society. Is there any... not too many. I can't think of where that would naturally occur anyway. But he wears a triple belt representing initiation into each of the three Vedas, embodying the knowledge of worship by sacrificial performance, which is contained in the Rig, Sama, and Yajur Vedas. His symbols are the ladle, spoon, and other implements of sacrifice. So here we have a four-armed form of the Lord with golden hair and a red complexion, wearing a triple belt representing initiation into each of the three different Vedas, Rig, Sama, and Yajur Vedas. And he carries a ladle, spoon, and other implements of sacrifice. So he comes to teach this sacrificial process. And it also explains a little bit about how he is known. It says, in Treta Yuga, the Lord is glorified by the names Vishnu, Yajna, Prishnigarbha, Sarvadev, Urukrama, Vrishakapi, Jayanta, and Urughaya. So these are some of the names of the Lord in the Treta Yuga, who comes to teach the Yuga Dharma for that age, which is sacrificial performance. Now, actually, Krishna is described as the Yuga avatar for the Dwapara Yuga. And so we know that the process of self-realization for that age was deity worship. So there's a description. It's not as direct in some ways, but it mentions that it gives a description how his incarnation is marked with that he has a Srivatsa mark on his chest with very distinctive ornaments and weapons. But in the, I'm just trying to scroll down to the right point. Yeah, there's a verse here. It says, my dear king in Dwapara Yuga, men who desire to know the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the Supreme Enjoyer, worship him in the mood of honoring a great king, following the prescriptions of both the Vedas and Tantras. So this actually refers to deity worship in the mood of on reverence, when we worship the deity. And actually, Krishna was worshipped in this way in Dwarka, especially in awe and reverence. So the mood of deity worship is awe and reverence, and as though the Lord was a great king with his consort and his followers. paraphernalia. And it says, when Krishna was leaving the city of Hastinapur, Arjuna personally held an umbrella over the Lord, and Uddhava and Satyaki fanned the Lord with decorated fans. So he was treated almost, when he was on the earth, you know, he was personally worshipped. Then just after his disappearance, his sons and grandsons established deities of Krishna everywhere. In fact, there's a description somewhere in the Bhagavatam, I think it's first canto or second canto, where it describes how these deities were installed in places all over the world. But some of them have not been found to this day. They've, you know, they, in the course of time, some of them are still there in India. And deities were established in Mathura and various other places. But it says that in other parts of the world, they're still trying to find these, you know, these deities are still undiscovered. So this was the established system. And when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came, of course, he gave the Yuga Dharma for the Kali Yuga, which is this chanting of the holy names. Now, the second question that was raised, and I can only answer this, I haven't found any direct references, but by point of logic, whenever they describe the process of self-realization for each age, they always say the same thing. Satya Yuga, meditation, Dwapara Yuga, deity worship, Tretha Yuga, sacrificial performance. In Kali Yuga, the chanting of the holy name. So the second question was, what is the process of self-realization in other Kali Yugas? And logically, you'd have to say that it would have to be the same in each time, because the Yuga cycles are endlessly rotating, and each time the same system of self-realization is described. It just says Kali Yuga. It doesn't say just in this Kali Yuga. It always just says Kali Yuga. So as a point of logic, at least, philosophical speculation. Prabhupada said there's two kinds of speculation. One is mental speculation, which means that you come to a conclusion that's not very Krishna conscious. And philosophical speculation, when the conclusion is Krishna's to Bhagavan Swayam. So, to be on the safe side, at least we have to call it a speculation, but at least by philosophical speculation and logic, we can assume that this process of self-realization is the same. If anybody can find a reference which specifically says in each and every Kali Yuga, that would be helpful. But I wasn't able to find one. All right, so that takes care of the last class. Now we're going to go to this one. And the verse of the board is Adi Leela, chapter 3, text 92. Sorry. Acharya Gosani Prabhura Bhaktavatar Krishnavatara Hetu Yanhara Hungar. So I'm going to switch glasses. This is what happens when you get older, you see. You're dependent. So many material arrangements. Okay. How do you say that second word? You know. Second word in the verse. Goshai. Goshai, okay. Acharya Gosai Prabhura Bhaktavatar. Acharya Gosai. Krishna avatar hetu yanhar ahunkar. Acharya Gosai Prabhura Bhaktavatar. Krishna avatar hetu yanhar ahunkar. Okay. Bhaktavata. Acharya Gosai Prabhur Bhakta Avatar. Krishna Avatar Hetu Yanhara Hunkar. Anybody else? Acharya Gosai, Advaita Acharya Gosai, Prabhura of the Lord, Bhakta Avatar, incarnation of a devotee, Krishna of Lord Krishna, Avatar of the incarnation, Hetu, the cause, Yanhara, whose hunkar, loud calls. Translation: Advaita Acharya Goswami is an incarnation of the Lord as a devotee. His loud calling was the cause for Krishna's incarnation. So I'm going to read a few verses more. Krishna yadi pratidite karena avatar pratame karana guru vargera sanchar. Whenever Sri Krishna desires to manifest his incarnation on earth, first he creates the incarnations of his respectable predecessors. Pita mata guru adi yata manya ghana ghan pratame karena sabara pratidite janam. Thus, respectable personalities such as his father, mother, and spiritual master all take birth on earth first. Madhava Ishwara Puri Sachi Jagannath Advaita Acharya Prakata Hoila Se Sat. Madhavendra Puri, Ishwara Puri, Srimati Sachi Mata, and Srila Jagannath Mishra all appeared with Sri Advaita Acharya. Purport. Whenever the Supreme Personality of Godhead descends in his human form, he sends ahead all his devotees who act as his father, teacher, and associates in many roles. Such personalities appear before the descent of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Before the appearance of Lord Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there appeared his devotees like Sri Madhavendra Puri, his spiritual master, Sri Ishwara Puri, his mother, Srimati Sachi Devi, his father, Sri Jagannath Mishra, and Sri Advaita Acharya. So, is Bhakta Nimesh here? No. Anyway, somebody should let him know that I'm not going to stick to his 92 through 95. I'm going to speak on some other verses as well, but maybe somebody can tell him. Okay. To comment briefly on this purport, there are many. When Krishna comes to display his pastimes in whatever form, he always sends ahead certain personalities, some of his eternal associates, to kind of prepare the way. Not mentioned in this list, although extremely important in the appearance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is Haridas Thakur, because it's described that by the loud cries of Advaita Acharya and also by the sincere chanting of Haridas Thakur that Lord Chaitanya agreed to descend. So these personalities who serve as guru, as father, as mother, as elders, are all great personalities, great associates from the spiritual world. So they've all come in advance. So it goes on with the description, text 96. Prakatiya dheke acharya sakala sangsar Krishna bhakti gandahina vishaya vyavahar. Advaita Acharya having appeared, he found the world devoid of devotional service to Sri Krishna because people were engrossed in material affairs. Text 97. Keha pape keha punye kara vishaya bhog bhakti ghanda nahi yate yaya bhavarog. Everyone was engaged in material enjoyment, whether sinfully or virtuously. No one was interested in the transcendental service of the Lord, which can give total relief from the repetition of birth and death. So this expression, bhavarog, refers to the disease of material existence. Actually, you know, sometimes people think, they don't generally think of, if you ask the average person, you know, what do you think about existence? And they hardly ever describe it as a disease. Sometimes when people get really old and ill, they might describe it that way. But generally people don't think of it that way. But in fact, having to undergo the cycle of birth and death is described here as a disease. Not a pleasant situation or circumstance. In the purport, Prabhupada writes, Advaita Acharya saw the entire world to be engaged in activities of material piety and impiety. Without a trace of devotional service or Krishna consciousness anywhere. The fact is that in this material world there is no scarcity of anything except Krishna consciousness. So this was Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's statement, that there was no lack of anything except for God consciousness, Krishna consciousness. Material necessities are supplied by the mercy of the Supreme Lord. We sometimes feel scarcity because of our mismanagement. But the real problem is that people are out of touch with Krishna consciousness. This is a very important point that Prabhupada is making here, because sometimes people say that there is tremendous scarcity in the world, scarcity of resource, scarcity of food, scarcity of so many things. But according to this, it actually, in a material sense, there's no scarcity. But there is a scarcity of Krishna consciousness, and therefore, because of the lack of Krishna consciousness, things are mismanaged. So actually, there's full capacity to grow sufficient food to feed the world, and yet because of greed and selfishness, and various other forms of mismanagement, it's not being properly distributed. So, generally, the problem is not a lack of matter. It's a lack of spirit, or a lack of Krishna consciousness. That's actually the defect. That's the real problem, Prabhupada says, that people are out of touch with Krishna consciousness. And he goes on to say, everyone is engaged in material sense gratification, but people have no plan for making an ultimate solution to their real problems, namely birth, disease, old age, and death. These four material miseries are called bhavarog, or material diseases. They can be cured only by Krishna consciousness. Therefore, Krishna consciousness is the greatest benediction for human society. So, you know, we know, we hear this time and time again, that the real problems of life are. Sometimes people identify other problems which are temporarily troubling them, but these are the real problems. In fact, you know, in the story, the emblematic story of Lord Buddha, he was a prince, brought up in fabulous wealth and opulence, and his father was hoping that he would be destined to become the next king. And he kept him from the outside world because he didn't want him to see the miseries, because at the time of his birth it was predicted that he would be a great king or a great sage, great spiritual leader. So his father tried to keep him from noticing that there was anything miserable about the world. But somehow or other, he managed to journey out, and he perceived these miseries of birth, old age, disease, and death, and realized that the only real point of human life is to solve these problems. But there's no material solution. A friend of mine who's very fond of saying, there's no material solution to your material problems. And here Prabhupada states, they can be cured only by Krishna consciousness. So it's a fact that the only solution to these problems is Krishna consciousness. Therefore, Krishna consciousness is described as the greatest benediction for human society. So it's the most important thing that can be offered. And it's actually a pretty desperate situation, which we're going to discover in more detail in the next verse, and which is going to be the kind of the theme, how urgent it is to spread Krishna consciousness, because actually it's the only thing that can save people from the real problems of life. So in the next verse, we have Loka Gati Deki Acharya Karuna Kridai Vichara Karena Lokera Kaiche Hita Hai. Seeing the activities of the world, the Acharya felt compassion. So this is the response of an elevated soul. When they see how people are suffering so much, then their response is to try to not just feel compassion, but to exhibit it practically. It's you know, sometimes people express great sentiments about the suffering that exists in the world. They say, oh, isn't that a shame? You know, people are living in very elaborate material situations of great comfort. And they're looking out and saying, oh, what a shame that people are suffering so much. But that's as far as their compassion goes. Some lip service. But the Acharyas, their mood is to become very active. They're very practical, actually. Sometimes people think that spiritual life is some kind of, insubstantial, ethereal sort of activities. Meditation, sitting, doing nothing. They think of it as inactivity even. But actually the whole point of the Acharyas is that they become active in trying to help people. So here we find that Advaita Acharya was feeling compassion. And he began to ponder how he could act for the people's benefit. So he was feeling compassion, and then what was the next thing? What can I do about it? Prabhupada was also very practical like that. There's a nice story that Satsarup Maharaj tells. Of course, he happened to be the one that had to learn this lesson the hard way by being chastised. But it's an important point. He was serving as Prabhupada's secretary. And Prabhupada had asked him to send a letter to somebody and make an enclosure of some document. So the letter was sent. And then the response came back that, I got your letter, but there was no enclosure. So Prabhupada called Satsarup Maharaj and questioned him, "Why? What is this? Why was there no enclosure?" And Satsarup Maharaj, of course, I'm sorry, I forgot to put it in. But then Prabhupada began to question him very intensely, but why? Why have you forgotten? And so he became kind of, you know, he didn't know what to say. So then he began to make excuses. And finally he was saying things like, I guess it must be because I don't love you enough that I don't, you know, and things like that. And Prabhupada just didn't like any of his answers. He's saying, why? And finally, when Satsarup Maharaj was practically in tears, Prabhupada looked at him and could understand that he just didn't understand the line of his question. And he said, what are you going to do about it? So that's what Prabhupada wanted to know. Not, you know, how you're feeling, why you forgot, how you're not a good devotee. And so all this, you know, kind of rubbish, self-pitying sort of excuses. What are you going to do about it? Then Satsarup Maharaj could understand, okay, I'll send another letter with the enclosure explaining that I forgot to enclose it the last time and apologize. Prabhupada said, yes, do it. So this is Acharya. He doesn't want to hear a lot of sentiment. Sentiment's all right. Not that we shouldn't have sentiment. But the sentiment should be accompanied by practical activity. Talk is cheap, they say. You know, people sometimes express big, big plans about what they're going to do, and they have this scheme and that scheme, and they draw elaborate, draw up elaborate plans and plan makers, Prabhupada calls the plan makers. And in the end, nothing happens. So Prabhupada was very practical in this respect. If somebody had a plan and they were actually doing that, executing it, he would spend time with them and encourage them like anything and work with them. But if they just talked and didn't do anything, he wasn't. Like that story, you probably heard me tell it before, some of you. There was one of his disciples, Prabhupada was speaking, and he said, didn't Lord Buddha teach something similar to what you teach? Prabhupada's response, do you follow Lord Buddha? The disciple, well, no. He said, you simply speak of him? He said, Lord Buddha was very nice. He was a great prince. He renounced everything to become self-realized. Do like that. He said, follow Lord Buddha or Jesus Christ or Muhammad or Krishna. He said, it doesn't matter much, but do something and do it perfectly. So his point was, don't just talk, do something. And that's the nature of the acharya. That's the example of all the great acharyas. That they figure out the ways and means to distribute Krishna consciousness to others because of its urgent necessity. So anyway, let's read the purport. Purport, this sort of serious interest in the welfare of the public makes one a bona fide acharya. An acharya does not exploit his followers. Since the acharya is a confidential servitor of the Lord, his heart is always full of compassion for humanity in its suffering. He knows that all suffering is due to the absence of devotional service to the Lord, and therefore he always tries to find ways to change people's activities, making them favorable for the attainment of devotion. That is the qualification of an acharya. Although Sri Advaita Prabhu himself was powerful enough to do the work, as a submissive servitor, he thought that without the personal appearance of the Lord, no one could improve the fallen condition of society. I mean, Advaitacharya was actually an incarnation of the Lord. He was a combination of Mahavishnu and Sadashiva. So, I mean, he was certainly sufficiently powerful to do this, but he felt that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would be able to be the most effective. And he was always in the mood of a servitor also. That is the interesting aspect of the Vishnu Tattva, that although they are personally expansions of the Lord, they're always thinking of themselves as servitors of the Lord. So in that mood, it says, he was thinking that no one could, but Lord Chaitanya himself, could improve the fallen condition of society. In the grim clutches of Maya, the first-class prisoners of this material world wrongly think themselves happy, because they are rich, powerful, resourceful, and so on. These foolish creatures, and this is a great sentence, sometimes in Prabhupada's thrashing materialistic attitudes, he becomes very poetic. It's kind of like the nature of the acharyas, they're poetic. It's one of the qualities of a devotee, one of those 26 qualities. So here it says, these foolish creatures do not know that they are nothing but play dolls in the hands of material nature, and that at any moment, material nature's pitiless intrigues can crush to dust all their plans for godless activities. This is a great sentence. I just want to read it again because it's so good. These foolish creatures, that's us, do not know that they are nothing but play dolls in the hands of material nature, and that at any moment, material nature's pitiless intrigues can crush to dust all their plans for godless activities. Good, isn't it? Such foolish prisoners cannot see that however they improve their position by artificial means, the calamities of repeated birth, death, disease, and old age are always beyond the jurisdiction of their control. Foolish as they are, they neglect these major problems of life and busy themselves with false things that cannot help them solve their real problems. They know that they do not want to suffer death or the pangs of disease and old age, but under the influence of the illusory energy, they are grossly negligent and therefore do nothing to solve their problems. This is called Maya. So probably here, this is a definition of Maya, apparently. Or being in Maya, that you're facing birth, death, old age, and disease, but you don't do anything about it. People held in the grip of Maya are thrown into oblivion after death, And as a result of their karma in the next life, they become dogs or gods. Although most of them become dogs. Now, this is a significant statement. Sometimes we might want to get sentimental about people taking a human birth after this life. Well, most of the population is not going to take a human birth, according to this, because of their activities. I mean, people are not, generally in this age, are not really heavily involved in pious activities. Generally, they're very much involved in meat eating, gambling, illicit sex, intoxication, etc., etc. So, that's the general absorption. A few people maybe are engaged in sufficiently pious credit activities to warrant a human birth, but here it says, but most of them become dogs. Dogs is a euphemism for, you know, lower creatures. So, to become gods in the next life, they must engage in the devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Otherwise, they are sure to become dogs or hogs in terms of the laws of nature. So here's a nice example of Acharya's not mincing words. He doesn't say, oh, maybe it'll be okay. He says, no, probably you're going to become a dog or a hog or something like that. The third class prisoners, being less materially opulent than the first class prisoners, endeavor to imitate them, for they also have no information of the real nature of their imprisonment. Thus, they are also misled by the illusory material nature. The function of the Acharya, however, is to change the activities of both the first class and third class prisoners for their real benefit. This endeavor makes him a very dear devotee of the Lord, who says clearly in Bhagavad Gita that no one in human society is dearer to him than a devotee who constantly engages in his service by finding ways to preach the message of Godhead for the real benefit of the world. The so-called acharyas of the age of Kali are more concerned with exploiting the resources of their followers than mitigating their miseries. In other words, it's basically a money-collecting business. But Sri Advaita Prabhu, as an ideal acharya, was concerned with improving the condition of the world situation. So, this mood of the acharya to actively engage, and they give their whole life and soul to this endeavor. How late does the class go? That's what I'm trying to... Nine. Oh, okay, so I have some time. I'll try not to hold you until then. Leave some time for questions. But this mood of actively engaging in coming up with novel ways to engage people in Krishna consciousness, this is the mood of the Acharya. This is what their whole life and soul. We see that in recent history, especially Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and Srila Prabhupada, they all had this mood of outreach, of not just simply practicing, not just being concerned about their own... sometimes we hear devotees talk a lot about spiritual advancement. I want to try to make spiritual advancement. And they think that, you know, somehow that if I really think about myself all the time and how I can be benefited, that I'll make advancement. But actually, the key to spiritual advancement, if that's what a person's worried about, is service. If you want to make spiritual advancement, then think how you can be of service. That's the key to spiritual advancement. In fact, if you should be concerned with service, not advancement. Advancement will take care of itself. So this is the mood of the Acharya, that they're concerned with the service of helping people. They're not concerned about themselves. You know, the example is Prahlad Maharaj. Prahlad Maharaj was praying, this is in the seventh canto. Prahlad Maharaj was praying, my dear Lord, I'm not concerned about myself, but I'm concerned with love, out of affection, for all those fools and rascals that are rotting in material existence. And the first time I ever saw Prabhupada in New York City in 1971, that's the only thing I can remember from the lecture, but it really struck me that he was saying that this was the mood of Prahlad Maharaj, that he was simply thinking about how others could be helped. What was the first thing he asked for when Lord Mashinga asked him what if he wanted any kind of a benediction? Does anybody know? Yeah. Huh? Well, not as I remember it. Yes? Yeah, he asked that his father be delivered. Now look, think of who his father was. His father was probably the greatest demon ever. He demonized and terrified the whole universe. And yet the first thing he asked the Lord for was to forgive his father and to give him liberation. So this is the mood of an acharya, that despite anybody's condition, they're thinking, how can they be assisted to make progress getting out of this bhava rogue that we've been describing? So this was the mood of Prahlad Maharaj. How can they be? So that was the first thing that ever registered on me that Prabhupada said. And it was obvious as he was speaking that he was the personification of that mood. That, you know, he was speaking about Prahlad Maharaj, but what was he doing exactly? This, he was simply constantly traveling, writing, preaching, just to try to help, you know, bring people to this point of Krishna consciousness. He gave his whole life. Some people have even analyzed that his life was actually shortened because he expended so much energy and effort and underwent so much difficulty in spreading this Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada used to also cite the example of Jesus Christ, that he gave his life for the benefit of his followers. So I looked up a couple of things, because this theme that really struck me here is that about the next birth, why it's such a critical thing to spread Krishna consciousness. In the I can't remember which canto this is from. The second canto, 10th chapter. Prabhupada writes a purport to this verse. The verse is, one should, talks about renunciation. The verse has to do with the theme of renunciation. But in the purport, Prabhupada writes, high government officers and ministers stick to their prized posts until death, and they neither dream nor desire to get out of homely comforts. Bound by such hallucinations, materialistic men prepare various plans for a still more comfortable life. But suddenly, cruel death comes without mercy and takes away the great plan maker against his desire, forcing him to give up the present body for another body. Such a plan maker is thus forced to accept another body in one of the 8,400,000 species of life according to the fruits of the work he has performed. In the next life, persons who are too much attached to family comforts are generally awarded lower species of life on account of sinful acts. Now, this is another important thing to remember as preachers of Krishna consciousness, that not only is there a danger of having to take birth again, but there's a danger of having to take birth again in lower species of life. That is a very real and pressing concern. That generally people who are living a normal materialistic lifestyle in this age, they're not going to take a nice human birth next time. They're going to take probably a lower birth. In fact, that was identified by Prahlad, again, as the greatest danger of having to take birth again. This is the greatest danger that we face, is not only to think about it, taking birth again as some creature without any Krishna consciousness. Simply having to suffer in that body and work your way gradually back up to the human platform again. This may take millions of years, depending on how much you're demoted in this lifetime. So it's actually a very serious existential situation. The plight of the living being in this world, it's a very serious matter. And it's not a question of arrogance or egotism to think, oh, we've got the answer. I mean, it's just a necessity to try to get this information out. It's not that we have any particular credits, but we should be thinking, scheming how to get this message out there, to try to reach people. It says here, I'll just read that part again, it says that people who very much get addicted to this materialistic way of life, family comforts, And it says, on account of sinful acts performed during a long duration of sinful life, their human life is spoiled. They're awarded lower species of life, it says. In order to be saved from the danger of spoiling the human form of life and being attached to unreal things, one must take warning of death at the age of 50, if not earlier. So this is the Vedic system, that at 50 one reduces his material involvement and focuses his mind, his energy, his efforts on self-realization and on trying to help others. Here's another section from the 10th chapter of 2nd Canto. It says, if a human being develops taste without discrimination, as does the swine, then the controlling deity is certainly certified for the next term to award him the body of a swine. The swine accepts any kind of foodstuff, including stools, and a human being who has developed such indiscriminate taste must be prepared for a degraded life in the next life. Such a life is also God's grace, because the conditioned soul desired a body like that for perfectly tasting a particular type of foodstuff. If a man gets the body of a swine, it must be considered the grace of the Lord, because the Lord awards the facility. After death, the next body is offered by superior control, not blindly. A human being, therefore, must be on his guard as to what sort of body he is going to have in the next life. An irresponsible life of indiscrimination is risky. So that's the risk, this lower animalistic form and consciousness. And that is the declaration of all scriptures. Then, in another place, he says, this is from the 3rd canto, if I am in the mode of goodness, then I may be preparing for promotion to the higher planets. If I am in the mode of passion, then I shall remain here in a society where activity is very prominent. And if I am in the mode of ignorance, I may be degraded to animal life or a lower grade of human life. So generally, in this age, people are in this lower mode, predominantly in the lower mode. He goes on to say, a devotee always prays, for my misdeeds, may I be born again and again, but my only prayer is that I may not forget your service. The devotee has that much mental strength that he prays to the Lord, may I be born again and again, but let me be born in the home of your pure devotee, so that I may again get a chance to develop myself. So this this is the prayer of the Vaishnav. He's not considering that he's such a great personality that, you know, it's automatic that he's going back to Godhead. He's thinking, I've done so many bad things in the course of my many lifetimes, so please, my prayer is that I won't forget your service, and that if I am born again, at least let me be born in the home of your devotee so that I might remember you. Then it says, it describes the ideal consciousness. It says, a pure devotee is not anxious to elevate himself in his next birth. He has already given up that sort of hope. He's not interested in elevation. In any life in which one is born, as a householder or even as an animal, one must have some children, some resources, or some possessions. But a devotee is not anxious to possess anything. He is satisfied with whatever is obtained by God's grace. He is not at all attached to improving his social status or improving the status of education of his children. That's an interesting point, huh? He's not attached to that. Maybe he does it. He makes arrangements for them, but he says he's not very attached to improving his social status, which sometimes becomes a great, even in the devotee community, sometimes this becomes quite a prominent feature. The people are very, very hung up on their social status, how they're viewed by others, and what, you know, how much honor they're being afforded in the assembly of Vaishnavas. So it says he's not attached to that, or improving the status of education of his children. He's not neglectful. So, second point, not neglectful, but he is dutiful. But he does not spend too much time on the upliftment of temporary household or social life. So what happens sometimes is that people become obsessed or overly concerned with a very temporary situation. And therefore, a lot of their human energy goes into this, into what he describes here as the upliftment of temporary household or social life. He fully engages in the service of the Lord, and for other affairs, he simply spares as much time as absolutely necessary. In other words, he's not neglectful, as he mentioned earlier, but he doesn't waste too much time on it either. Whatever is absolutely necessary. And then he says, Yatarham upayunjata. Such a pure devotee does not care for what is going to happen in the next life or in this life. He does not care even for family, children, or society. He fully engages in the service of the Lord in Krishna consciousness. It is stated in Bhagavad Gita that without the knowledge of the devotee, the Lord arranges for his devotee to be immediately transferred to his transcendental abode just after leaving his body. After quitting his body, he does not go into the womb of another mother. The ordinary common living entity after death is transferred to the womb of another mother according to his karma or activities to take another type of body. But as far as the devotee is concerned, he is at once transferred to the spiritual world in the association of the Lord. That is the Lord's special mercy. How it is possible will be explained in the following verses. Because he is all-powerful, the Lord can do anything and everything. He can excuse all sinful reactions. So when he says he can excuse all sinful reactions, what is this? What verse in the Bhagavad Gita is this paraphrasing, do you think? Huh? That's one. Anybody else? Huh? I can't hear. Yes, very good. Thank you. That's an important verse. He says, I'll take care of all your sinful reactions. Don't fear. Do not fear. So if one's fully surrendered to the service of the Lord, he doesn't have any problems. There was a disciple once who was crying and lamenting about something or other, and Prabhupada was patting him and saying, "You have no problems." And smiling, "You have no problems." He was thinking he had plenty of problems, but Prabhupada was patting him saying, "You have no problems." Because he was fully engaged in Krishna consciousness, he was telling him, really, you don't have any problems anymore. There's only four problems, and, you know, these are quickly being solved. You have no problems. So if you're fully engaged in Krishna consciousness and trying to distribute Krishna consciousness, you don't have any problems. One time, somebody asked Prabhupada something about, I don't remember the exact wording, but it's this effect. He said, some reporter asked, Do you experience any difficulties in spreading this Krishna conscious movement? Prabhupada said, he says, "I have no difficulties." He said, "You have difficulties." Which is certainly the case. He says, I have no difficulties. He said, "You have difficulties." So, because he is all-powerful, the Lord can do anything and everything. He can excuse all sinful reactions. He can immediately transfer a person to Vaikuntha Loka. That is the inconceivable power of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is favorably disposed to the pure devotees. So, if we are focused and absorbed in trying to figure out how to spread Krishna consciousness and be of service to the Vaishnavas, then we'll have no problems. It doesn't mean you won't encounter difficulties. It doesn't mean your mind will never become agitated. It doesn't mean a lot of things. It doesn't mean that, you know, that you won't have to struggle, but it means that ultimately you don't have any problems. And because you're simply focused on how to present, how to spread, how to reach out, and also, of course, first it begins with your own practice. You have to practice Krishna consciousness. You can't convince people very easily if you're not practicing. In fact, that's the description of the Acharya, that there's two things. There's those who practice very nicely but don't preach, and then those who preach quite nicely but don't practice. But Haridas Thakur was described by Sanatana Goswami. He says, "You do both of these things, therefore you're the greatest devotee in the world." So to be truly effective, if you practice and you preach, then that's the ideal combination. Because that has potency, and people will respond to that. We see that someone may preach in a very simple manner, but if they're practicing very sincerely, their preaching has more potency than the greatest scholars. It has a transcendental power of attorney. So this is the theme that I wanted to present this morning, that that people are in a very dangerous condition all over the world, and it's only getting worse. People are leading very sinful and unfortunate lives. You know, there's that verse in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Brahmanda Brahmite Kona Bhagyavan Jeev. How does the Jeev become Bhagyavan, become fortunate? Guru Krishna Prasadi Pai Bhakti Lata Beach. So he has to be fortunate enough to... There's three different kinds of piety described by Bhaktivinoda Thakura. One form of piety increases your credits in karma, in terms of elevation to higher planets. One type of piety increases your credits in the platform of jnana or knowledge. But the third kind of piety, which is called bhakti unmukhi sukriti, that means pious activities that are generated by the association of Vaishnavas. So that means that a Vaishnava, by his association, that bhakti lata beads, that seed of devotional service is planted in the heart of the living being. And by that watering process of hearing and chanting, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. This chanting, the watering process, then that seed will sprout, and the plant of devotion will develop. So it's simple, really. Simple thing. Practice it and try to give it. And try to give it according to, even if someone says, well, I don't know, I'm not that advanced, I don't know that much. One time, he's probably cited Saraswati, the daughter of Shamsundar and Malati, that she used to go up to people and say, do you know who Krishna is? And they would say, you know, she was only like 4 years old or 3 years old. They would say, you know, just to humor her, they would say, no. She'd say, he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He said, this is preaching. So, in other words, it doesn't take... Whatever you have, you give. And by giving it, you'll get more. So that's the way it works. By distributing, by practicing and by distributing, then that power of mercy will descend. And one will be able to spread Krishna consciousness if he's sincere. And if just to... fend off a question about how do you become sincere. When Prabhupada was asked about how to become sincere, he said, just be sincere. That's all. They kept saying, well, how do I do that? Just, in other words, it was kind of like the Nike ad, just do it. Be sincere. That means that you do the best you can. Anyway, I didn't mean to quite get so preachy, because I'm sure I'm not doing the best I can any time, but... Any, if there's any questions...